everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Chris Canty, filling in for the Hall of Famer Chris Carter, who is down in Atlanta for the Falcons-Saints game that he will be calling this weekend. This, of course, Nick Wright. We've got a great show for you today. Full weekend of football to preview. But where else could we start other than Baker Mayfield? It had been 635 long days since the Browns last won a game until last night against the Jets. With Baker Mayfield running the show, took over late in the first half after Tyrod Taylor left with a concussion, and he was great. Throwing for over 200 yards, completing 17 of his 23 passes, he led the Browns to a touchdown on the game-winning drive with just over 2 minutes left to go. A new era has begun in Cleveland. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, but wait, let's get ahead of ourselves. Here is Baker after the game.
You know, you got to feel the energy of the crowd, how badly they wanted it as well. You know, we got to play for each other, but at the same time, this city does deserve it. But we got to have that mindset of going to get it no matter what's happening. And so it felt great.
Once Baker got in the game at quarterback, you just saw a different rhythm, which was good to see. Obviously, young man did some really good things. I can't take that away from him. What a night for him. You know, obviously, he came off the bench, went in there and led this team and helped get this team to victory.
And he was so ready for this moment. He was prepared for this moment, you know, he grabbed it by the horns.
I've just been waiting for my moment, been patient. You know, I've been in a good opportunity, put in a good situation with guys around me, veteran QBs and great coaches that I can learn from. You know, it was never whining or complaining about playing time, just, you know, want the team to win, and no matter what the cost is.
Clearly, Baker Mayfield excited, and clearly Hugh Jackson tempering his excitement, because there are going to be a number of questions now, and we'll talk about that. But first, what did you make of Baker Mayfield's performance, Nick?
A star in the NFL is born. I mean, as simple as that. This is a guy who continues what has been a trajectory unlike almost any player in my memory. A walk-on at two schools who at his second school, his second to last year, sets the all-time college football efficiency mark. The next year breaks his own mark en route to winning the Heisman. Goes number one despite being maybe 6 feet tall. And in his first action for a team that hadn't won in a couple years, not only leads them to victory, but they were down 14-0 when he comes into that football game. All of a sudden, passes that were being missed were not only pinpoint accuracy, but high velocity. Candy, we were talking before the show, he's 17 of 23, mm-hmm. but three of those were perfectly placed balls that were just flatly dropped by the New York Jets. Aside from one pass that he got away with in the back of the end zone, mm-hmm. I don't think he missed a throw the entire game. This is a Browns team that in the last decade was 1-39 when trailing by double digits at the half.
Wow.
And they won last night. This is a Browns team who I believe their season was on the brink. And you might say, they hadn't won a game. They went 0-16 last year. They already had a tie this year. Why would their season be on the brink? Because they could have won week one. They could have won week two. You could argue they should have won both of those games. And if you finally are a favorite for the first time since before you got your last win, and you lose to a Jets team that is not very good, and your quarterback situation is unsettled, it's very easy for even a team with a bunch of new guys to feel like, same old Browns, here we go again. He infused this team with swagger, and most importantly, mm-hmm. he infused this team with skill. And I watched Baker Mayfield, and I said, this is why this guy has exceeded all expectations at every level. He was great last night.
No, Baker Mayfield was outstanding, and there's no doubt that he gave this team a spark when they needed it. Being able to come in and work that two-minute drill the way that he did, marching down the field for five plays, 39 yards, and then ultimately culminating in that field goal to get some points on the board for the first half. But when you looked at that Browns offense, before the last possession that Tyrod was the quarterback, they had a grand total of 2 first downs.
Yep.
So, I mean, they weren't moving the ball in the first half. They weren't consistent. But when Baker got in the game, he was outstanding, especially on third down passing. He was 5 for 7 for 55 yards, and he had 4 conversions. So, I mean, it was impressive to see his understanding of the concepts that Hugh Jackson was asking him to execute. He identified the coverages, seeing that the Jets were in single high and being able to attack the seams. That ball that he threw to Jarvis Landry when he just dunked Sean Middleton, the safety for the Jets. That was an outstanding placement of the football. You can't throw it any better than that. It was a great catch by
Jarvis Landry. The Jarvis right by the goal line.
I think we're showing it right now.
It seemed like it was an impossible catch, but also
that,
an impossible
that looks like
throw.
An NBA poster. Yep. Exactly. Jarvis Landry makes a great play, but, I mean, he put that ball only where his guy could get it. And that's the impressive thing about Baker Mayfield. And he had a perfectly placed fade route to Antonio Callaway. Callaway just dropped it. But, Nick, you mentioned it. You saw the velocity in his passes. It was a different ball that receivers had to catch versus what Tyrod had been doing for this team. So you can see why John Dorsey made the decision to draft Baker Mayfield. The physical talent is there, but now we're starting to see the actual production now that he's in the game.
You also can't ignore the fact that as soon as he came into that game, there was a shift in energy. You heard it from the crowd. You almost saw it from the other players. They were a little more focused. They were catching balls that were dropped earlier in the first half. You saw it in the results. Obviously, he was putting points on the board. But then you wonder, is that, you know, how much of that was just momentum? You have your new guy in, your heralded chief, and how much of that is like, this is something that's sustainable.
No,
this is something that can
last. It was that he's better.
Yes,
listen,
he's
flatly a better football player. Tyrod got a raw deal last year, and the people in Buffalo still seem to want to recreate the history of what happened last year. But Tyrod this year has been bad. He was awful in week one. Week two, he was better, but threw a brutal interception, and he got a little shine because of that big fourth and five touchdown that they thought was going to be the game winner. And yesterday was the worst he had played. They could not move the football. Baker is a better football player than Tyrod Taylor. And the experience of, if we remember to the preseason, Tyrod in the game that I thought he broke his wrist, where it looked like he had suffered a bad injury. Baker came in and didn't play very well in the moments he had, and then Tyrod came back. Baker said after the game, I wasn't ready to go in. It was coming in off the bench is a new experience for me in that regard. That experience did him well, I feel like, in this game. Because they might have made a change at halftime either way, but he was ready to go on a moment's notice once Tyrod went in concussion protocol. And you mentioned it. Those 3 points before the half were huge. And to your point, Jenna, about the crowd, the beginning of this game, those Browns fans, it sounded like a playoff game. Those fans were as hyped for a Week 3 Thursday night game as I've ever heard.
But that
the crowd
quickly dropped off.
It went away, then he reinvigorated them.
No, he did reinvigorate them. They scored on four of his first five possessions as the starting quarterback. But when I looked at last night's game, that was two teams that were trying to prove to themselves that they were who they thought they were coming into this season. What Todd Bowles has been saying to his team, what Hugh Jackson had been saying to his team, both franchises are trying to turn the page on losing seasons. And so I think when you looked at that game last night, it almost presented the perfect opportunity for Baker Mayfield to step in, because now you have a chance, if you're Hugh Jackson, to solidify him as your starting quarterback moving forward, because you have a long weekend. It's almost like a mini bye week. So you can take advantage of that time. And then you've got the Oakland Raiders, who, oh, by the way, struggle to get to the quarterback. And it's a team that's still trying to find their way. So if you were going to pick a spot in your schedule where you would make Baker Mayfield the starting quarterback, this would be the time. I know John Dorsey and Hugh Jackson didn't want to play Bake the entire year, but you can't deny the talent that this guy has, and you saw how the team responded.
And a lot of Browns fans are probably asking, why not just start Baker from the start? If it was so clear that he was the better quarterback coming in, why wouldn't that have been the choice?
Well, I don't know that he was the better quarterback for week one. I don't, like, right now it looks like that. I don't know how much he benefited from not having the expectations of being the week one starter. I don't know how much he benefited from watching NFL football on the sidelines for the first couple weeks. And we did not expect Tyrod Taylor, who, as far as taking care of the football, is one of the three best in NFL history. It's the one thing he does at an elite level, take care of the football. We didn't expect that he would have brutal turnovers in weeks one and two, but Baker will be the starting quarterback moving forward. After the game, it seemed like the entire internet, Chris, was criticizing Hugh Jackson for not saying, yes, Baker's our starter. Even if he knows it, which he does, you can't do that to Tyrod. You can't while a guy
not
is...
Not in that moment.
No, you can't have him find out while he's concussed via the media. Like, you just flatly can't. There's nothing to be gained by announcing it right there. The players know that when they play the Raiders, Baker's going to be the starter. Tyrod probably knows. But Hugh Jackson would have, I think, you tell me as a player, I think it would have, he would have been doing a disservice to Tyrod Taylor, who's handled everything like a professional, to announce it at the podium moments after the game.
Well, that's what it comes down to. There's a respect factor between Hugh Jackson and Tyrod Taylor. He's a veteran player, and so you have to offer the opportunity to at least have a sit down and explain the situation and tell him at this point, with the franchise, it's best for the team if they go in the direction of the young quarterback, because Baker Mayfield just showed it on the field, and that's undeniable. The other 51 guys in the locker room, they know who the best quarterback on this roster is. They know who the guy that gives them the best chance to win is. It's Baker Mayfield. And so eventually this was going to be his team, but because of the injury, Tyrod getting banged up last night,
it's sooner than
everybody expected.
And the other thing those guys know quickly here, that defense is very good.
Oh, yeah.
That defense is ready to win right now. And so if you get an infusion at the quarterback position, this Browns team, I know that most people are like, hey, they could win 4 or 5 games. I was out on a limb saying, I think they can go 9-7. Well, they have a tie now, so that's messed up. But this is a Browns team that can compete with a good portion of the league because that defense is ball hawking, and all of a sudden, they might have a plus player at quarterback.
Cleveland Browns get their first win. Let's call it a season, and everybody go home, and we'll start again next year. I feel like we're at the peak.
635 days, Jenna.
We're at the peak. We don't want to go anywhere but up. Coming up, Antonio Brown speaks up after his drama-filled week. Next on First Things First. Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. This week, we're ranking best tailgates. Vote on Twitter or Instagram with the hashtag FanIndex plus the hashtag for your school, and you can learn more at collegefootballfanindex.com. So far, Clemson is leading this week. All right, guys, how great is a good one? Good old college football tailgate.
The best college football tailgate I've ever been to was in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Mm. Arkansas Razorbacks. Yeah. Amazing food, amazing crowd. I'm surprised to not see the SEC more represented here. Florida's there. None of the Texas schools in the Big 12 are represented, and not many SEC schools. Candy, I know at UVA you guys don't do tailgate.
No,
you're too
we
busy
didn't.
Studying and stuff like that. So I mean, I understand. You guys are a thinking man's
school. It's more of the wine and cheese crowd.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying.
Do you have a favorite?
No, I don't have
tailgate?
A favorite, but the people at Death Valley, otherwise known as Memorial Stadium in Clemson, they always seem like they're having a good time. Every game that I've played down there, you go in there, and everybody is having a blast. So, yeah, it's appropriate that they're at the top of this list.
I feel like LSU could make a late push on this.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know they usually have their games at night, so they have all day to get it cracking.
All day to get it going. Absolutely.
All day.
All right, we'll get to the Antonio Brown controversy in just a second, but first, this is Temple's Rock Ya-Sin with an insane interception.
Wait, I thought this was going to be one of those catches off a guy's head. Oh, that's a hell of a play.
Wow, that is outstanding.
A little Thursday night college football action while all of us were watching Baker. Rock Ya-Sin out there making plays.
All right, speaking of, the Baker Mayfield and Jarvis Landry connection on full display last night. What a catch.
That's unbelievable.
Perfectly thrown ball, too.
That is unbelievable. I mean, that's an alley-oop, NBA, getting dunked on poster. That's exactly what that is. That's outstanding by Juice Landry.
Took it right off the defender's head, essentially, is where it was going. It's another one of these plays that we've shown in these butt first highlights with almost perfect coverage.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a bad play by the defender.
Hold on, the connection didn't stop there. This time, Jarvis Landry connects with, wait for it, Baker Mayfield with a 2-point conversion.
So Baker Mayfield has a catch in his first meaningful game as a quarterback in the NFL, and in his last collegiate game, the Rose Bowl, he also had a catch. So,
oh, how about that?
Baker Mayfield going back-to-back in real games with catches.
Baker Mayfield already better than Tom Brady at least catching
there.
The football.
You had to take it there, huh?
Well, listen, facts are facts, Canny. That's what we do on this show. We spit facts.
All right, I hear you.
Most of the time, like 4 out of the 5 days. Mm. Hey, in case you missed any of the drama in Pittsburgh this week, allow me to fill you in. Antonio Brown tweeted, trade me. Then he didn't show up to practice Monday. Then he got disciplined. Le'Veon Bell still isn't there. And fans in Pittsburgh are frustrated with head coach Mike Tomlin. Now you are officially caught up. Needless to say, frustrating times for the Steelers. Just ask Antonio Brown.
But obviously, I don't want to be traded. You know, I'm still grateful to put on my uniform. Grateful to be a part of this organization. You know, I don't take that for granted.
Are we losing the game? Are we getting beat by 40? We haven't won a game yet. For me, as a Steeler, that's unacceptable. You know, I'm not on the sideline begging for the ball or making statements like you guys make. I'm pissed off. We losing. We suck.
You just tied the game. James Conner just tied the game.
Now, you guys make assumptions about my emotion. You guys don't know me at all. You guys just write what you think gonna get hits. Between me and you, everyone in Locker know what I stand for, know what I'm about. You know, I'm committed to this program, this organization. I'm fully here. I go to work every day. I'm about my business, and I don't take it for granted. You know, my business is winning here. I come here to win. And the winner, you damn right I'm pissed off.
Antonio Brown had a lot to say yesterday. He spent 10 minutes talking to the media, which is a long time to give reporters. And look, there's still a lot of season left, but are you confident the Steelers can turn things around, Chris?
Well, first of all, I love Antonio Brown having that type of energy. I mean, I wish we could have played the whole 10 minutes that he spoke to the media yesterday. But in terms of all the questions surrounding him, I mean, he created this distraction when he missed the meeting on Monday. Like, that's just something that a veteran player getting paid when Antonio Brown is getting paid can't afford to do. It's a team that already had the distraction of Le'Veon Bell not being there at the start of the regular season. You don't need to add on to that. Now, in terms of his team not being bad, it's really not the offense that's bad. You're talking about the defense. It's one of the worst defenses in the National Football League in terms of touchdowns allowed through the air. They're dead last. In terms of running game, they're 30 out of 32. So the defense needs to come along for this Pittsburgh Steelers team. It's something that we thought would be improved with the draft capital that they put on that side of the ball the last few seasons, but it just hasn't worked out. And so that's one of those things that Mike Tomlin has to get fixed. But I will say this, with the distractions and all of the things going on with this football team, it makes it hard to address the X's and O's and going out there and executing on Sundays.
Listen, the defense, they missed Joe Hayden, but more importantly, they still have not figured out what to do since Ryan Shazier went down. This was one of the best defenses in the AFC until he got hurt. Since he got hurt, for the end of last year, the beginning of this year, they're allowing 28 points per game. That's second worst in the NFL. They're allowing 85% of their opponent's red zone drives to end in touchdowns. That's the worst in the NFL. You mentioned how bad the rush defense is, 30th out of 32 teams. Like, this is, the defense has been bad. I totally believe Antonio Brown is not on the sideline saying, give me the football. Mm-hmm. Last year, he had a moment where he thought he was open, he didn't get the ball, and he threw a cooler. And people, Antonio Brown is not only one of the best players in the league, one of the best leaders in the league, because he leads by example and by his play, his work ethic, his commitment to his body during and after the season. Now, you're right. He should have showed up to work on Monday.
Yep.
He took what I would call a mental health day, but you got to let people know you're taking one of those mental health days. And so that added to the controversy here. But can they turn it around? Of course. Like, they miss Le'Veon Bell. I understand James Conner has played well, and you're right that the offense has not been the problem. But against the Chiefs, Big Ben had to throw the ball 60 times. They maybe can have a better time of possession, give the defense a better shot if Le'Veon Bell is out there. In week one, James Conner, for as well as he did have a critical fumble late when they were up 14 points. They missed Le'Veon Bell, but last year, they not only got beat by the Bears, they then in week five got embarrassed by Jacksonville.
First month, Le'Veon Bell wasn't even having a great season. He was a non-factor almost last year, and they were still able to
no, but they struggled last year.
They did, but they were able to get themselves back.
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing. Le'Veon Bell is a special player, and so even if he's not being productive, him being out there on the field forces the defense to account for him. And so, yeah, Nick, when you have a defense that's struggling, as an offense, you realize how talented that you are. You've got to be able to try to control time of possession so your defense is not out there getting exposed as much as they have been over the course of the first 2 weeks of the season. But to your earlier point about Ryan Shazier, this is a team that can't control the middle of the football field. And if you can't control the middle of the football field, you are going to struggle. That's exactly what Tampa Bay has been doing the first 2 weeks of the season. For all of the hype that DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans are getting, it's really about Chris Godwin and O.J. Howard being productive in that middle of the field, providing easy completions for Ryan Fitzpatrick, which opens up things on the outside in one-on-one coverage. That's why this Bucs offense has been high-flying. This Pittsburgh Steelers defense has got to figure it out in a hurry because Monday night is fast approaching, and if they have been performing the same ways that they've been the first couple of weeks of the season, it could be another long night for that defense.
What do you think is the most important thing for this team to quickly turn things around? Obviously, they're not going to replace Shazier overnight, and you're not going to get Le'Veon Bell most likely Monday night.
Okay, well, you took both of my answers. I mean, what's the most important thing is they have now – I don't hold against them not being able to overcome Shazier's injury during the season last year. Not only was it a huge loss for them personnel-wise, but emotionally, I think seeing your leader on defense – having the question whether or not he can walk again, I would imagine that makes it harder to play pro football.
Yeah.
Makes it harder to go out there and stick your head in the way you're almost taught to metaphorically defensively. They have had an offseason to not only emotionally recover from that, but personnel-wise figure out how we are going to replace this great player. And the other thing is they do need Le'Veon Bell back. Mm-hmm. Like they since the big three, the triple Bs, whatever you want to call them, been together, when all three play, they're 41-19. When one of them is out, they're 15-13-1. Wow. They go from one of the best teams in the league to an average to below average team. They need Le'Veon Bell back, and that is a front office decision. Eyes wide open, they made the choice to not give him a legitimate long-term contract, knowing this was a possible repercussion.
Yep.
Now, I don't think they expected him to go as nuclear as he's gone.
Right.
But that is his right. And so that is – Le'Veon Bell has the power in this situation. I didn't think he was going to give up $900,000 a week, but thus far he has. That doesn't look like it's going to change this weekend. So they're going to have to find a way Monday night likely to win without him.
They probably thought what happened last year was going to happen this year. He would hold out, eventually just join the team, sign his tender, and then play out with
– slight miscalculation by Kevin Colbert. Just a little outside.
All right, take a break. Coming up, can Russell Wilson save the Seahawks' season against the Dallas Cowboys? That's next. This is First Things First. We've got two huge college football games tomorrow on Fox. First, it's number 17 TCU taking on Texas. The number 18 Wisconsin battles Iowa in a Big Ten showdown, all on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Wisconsin needs a win after that awful loss to BYU. Texas can turn their season around.
That's a bad loss for the Big Ten. Bad loss.
Tough. Texas can turn their season around with a win over TCU after their win over USC last week.
Time for stories. Aaron Rodgers missed practice yesterday, but is expected to play Sunday against Washington. Keep in mind, he missed practice last week, played well against the Vikings. Nick, what do you expect from Rodgers in this matchup?
I expect him to be as, if not more, effective than he was last week because they are not playing nearly as good of a defense as Minnesota, and they're playing Washington. The one thing that I need to be careful of, Washington's got a good nose tackle named Deron Payne, a rookie, that if he can get pressure up the middle, that's the way to get at Rodgers. Make him flush out to the left or the right, which I don't think he wants to do on that knee.
Yeah, the Washington Redskins have a good defensive front. So, I mean, they got guys that can get after it and collapse the pocket. They're not the Vikings, but it's still a lot of danger for Aaron Rodgers. But he's got his trusty buddy, Blue Steel, the knee brace that he's wearing. So we'll see how that works out. But it sounds like from Jay Gruden's quotes that they're going to trade some big plays in the passing game to get some hits on Aaron Rodgers. So look out for that early in that game.
They're top five in the NFL in number of blitzes this year. I expect them to continue that trend this weekend. Pardon me.
All right, moving on. The Saints head to Atlanta to take on the Falcons. Both teams sit at 1-1. Our own Chris Carter will be on the call. Chris Kenny, who wins this game?
I want to say the Atlanta Falcons. I just look
then
at
say
this.
It if you want to say it.
I want to say the Atlanta Falcons, but I'm just wondering at what point do the injuries start to catch up with that team? You already were down Deion Jones and Keanu Neal on defense. Now you're going to be down Devonta Freeman and Andre Levitre, the offensive guard, in this game. So I look at this team and I'm saying, okay, I loved them coming into this season, but with all of the injuries, I wonder at what point does it start to catch up to them? And the New Orleans Saints got to get back on track.
The New Orleans Saints need this game desperately. This is a big game, obviously. The NFC South is so good right now. You wonder if it could go from three playoff teams to only one, not because it's not as good, but because everybody goes 1-1 against each other and they beat each other up. Atlanta's offense was a fully functioning machine this past weekend against Carolina. I want to see if the Saints defense can get anywhere close back to where it was in 2017. Marcus Lattimore was great last year. Mm-hmm. This year he's allowing nearly a perfect passer rating when targeted. Also watch Julio Jones, who missed a practice this week.
All right, Jimmy G and the 49ers head to Kansas City to take on Pat Mahomes and the Red Hot Chiefs. Mahomes has thrown 10 touchdowns this year.
Has he?
Not bad for two games. Nick, do the Chiefs keep rolling against the 49ers?
I believe they do. I think the way you're going to have to beat the Chiefs this year is the way the Steelers tried to, which is score in the mid to high 30s.
Yep.
But I don't think the Niners have the personnel for it. I do think there's an interesting question that a lot of people probably have changed their answer on from before the season to right now. Who'd you rather have moving forward? Patty Mahomes on his rookie deal or Jimmy G at his about $28 million per year moving forward? Yeah. And even if they were making the same money, who would you rather have moving forward? My answer to both those questions would be Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, just from the physical skill sets, you can do more things with Pat Mahomes. Your offense has more versatility. But to answer the question, Nick, yeah, you got to roll with the Chiefs in that matchup just because I don't think that the 49ers have the weapons to match points. And you look at all those skill position players for the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill and Conley and Kelsey and Hunt. I mean, that's gonna be a tough offense to stop if Pat Mahomes continues to show the accuracy and he did in the first 2 weeks.
And Arrowhead's the loudest outdoor stadium in the league. This is the first game Patrick Mahomes will ever play at Arrowhead. My folks in Kansas City are going to be loud and ready on Sunday.
His folks. Yeah, finally, folks. Browns
literally,
got the first
folks,
win in over 600 days yesterday. They beat the Jets 21-17. Browns fans in absolute euphoria. Browns themselves in absolute euphoria as well. Here's Hugh Jackson after the game in the locker room praising Baker Mayfield.
This guy's been chomping at the bit to be out there with you guys. He's handled everything the right way. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of Coach Zampezi because Zampezi spends a lot of time with this guy. He's busted his ass. Where's Baker Mayfield? Yeah.
He's a little. Where's
little.
Baker Mayfield? Yeah. Oh, there you are, buddy.
He's
and he like,
little.
And he was like, oh, there you are, little guy. Big game, though, from a little guy. Nick, just how good could this Browns team be?
They can win more games than they lose. That's how good they can be. Mm-hmm. I said at the beginning of the year, 9-7. Now maybe that's 8-7-1. There were two reasons in particular that last year's Browns team was awful. They both had to do with turnovers. On offense, they turned the ball over more than anybody in the league, particularly at the quarterback position, where it wasn't just how many turnovers, but it was red zone turnovers, inside the 5-yard line turnovers. And on defense, they forced 13 turnovers all year long. They have forced 11 already through 3 weeks. And you might say, oh, a lot of those are in the Big Ben game. Man, they have forced six. They have recovered six fumbles this year. Like, they are forcing fumbles, recovering fumbles. The defense, I think, can be, as far as big plays, a top 10 defense. And if you have that, I love Myles Garrett. Emmanuel Ogba didn't play last night, but Larry Ogunjobi did. Mm-hmm. He was excellent. Denzel Ward looks like a star in the making. So you have all these guys on defense, plus you got an infusion at the quarterback position. So do I think they could win next week in Oakland? Absolutely, I think they could win next week in Oakland. And then you look at their first 2 weeks, even with Tyrod struggling at quarterback, they were in position with a better kicker to be 2-0 instead of 0-1-1 going into last night.
No, you're absolutely right. And you're talking about the Browns winning in Oakland next week. I mean, depending on how the Raiders look in Miami, they could be favored in
road
that game
favorites.
On the road.
Wow.
I mean, that's how far the Cleveland Browns have come. But, again, it speaks to the talent that's on this roster. A lot of losing went into getting all this talent on this roster. But, I mean, you've got top-end players at almost every level on your defense. So that's one of those things that's impressive to me when I look at this team. And a young quarterback's best friend, it's not a tight end, it's not a running game. It's having a defense that can create turnovers, extra possession, and better field position. That's exactly what the Browns are equipped to do, and that's what they've done throughout the first 3 weeks. That strip by Denzel Ward or Robbie Anderson, that was a huge turning point in last night's game, but those are the type of plays that Cleveland Browns defense is capable of making, and that's why I agree with you, Nick. I think that they can win more games than they lose this season.
And just real quick, Jenna, also, a lot of a football season, because it's so few games, such small sample size, is random bounces and luck. Ball hit the ground 3 times yesterday. Browns recovered all of them. They recovered that fumble that Denzel Ward forced, but then Baker Mayfield fumbled on late in the first half, and Joe Batonio picked it up and hilariously ran forward for 9 yards, even though it was called back. Late in the game, this was a critical play. Duke Johnson fighting for extra yards. He fumbles. The Browns
Rashard
fall on
Higgins, yep.
Rashard Higgins falls on it. Like, who is recovering fumbles? That's a coin flip. There's no skill to fumble recovery, skill to forcing fumbles. Sometimes you have a year where that luck goes in your favor. The Browns have had a couple years in a row where that luck has not gone.
It went in their favor for Deshaun Watson last year with Houston. And
absolutely.
You saw how well he ended up doing. And we should talk at some point about Denzel Ward, who a lot of people weren't sure why the Browns wanted to take him.
I'm one of them, hand raised.
He had back problems all preseason. Everyone wondered, well, is this guy really going to be able to have any production whatsoever? He seems to be hurt. Why the pick? And you see how well he did.
Small sample size, but it looks like John Dorsey got the first two picks right.
Yeah. He's forced three turnovers in three NFL games.
Yeah.
That's what Denzel Ward's done. And I, as well, I thought they were either going to take Saquon if he was there or Bradley Chubb. Those were the only options I thought they had at number four. I didn't see Denzel Ward coming. He's been excellent.
Defensive rookie of the year?
Right. Well, I mean, through 3 weeks, yeah. The Colts got a linebacker who's playing well, but nobody cares. Yeah.
So far, both their picks did really, really well. You saw that yesterday. Moving on to America's Game of the Week, Cowboys and Seahawks. Not quite the start either team had wanted. Dallas hoping to ride their momentum after beating the Giants last week, while Seattle is trying to avoid an 0-3 start. Both teams need to get their offense going. Both teams looking for this to be their big breakout game. Nick, I'll start with you. How well do the Cowboys match up against this Seahawks team?
If we look at the Cowboys' strength, which is not Dak Prescott, right now it's not even their running game. Right now their strength is their defensive front. Any team with a good defensive front is going to match up well against Seattle because Seattle, once again, has no offensive line. It's the curse of poor Russell Wilson. Maybe you win some, you got Sierra, you lose some, you don't have an offensive line because he's constantly running for his life. He's right now, we thought their offensive line was bad last year. He was sacked on about 7% of his dropbacks last year. This year, it's been 15% of his dropbacks he's been sacked. And the Cowboys have a healthy defensive front. They have a ferocious defensive front. And that's with David Irving still on suspension. Randy Gregory didn't even play last week. I think that's where they can win this football game, if they are going to win this football game. Constant defensive pressure on Russell Wilson, because I don't believe the Cowboys can beat you scoring in the 20s.
No.
I think they're going to have to win the way they've played the first 2 weeks. I know they didn't win week one, but they held Carolina to 16. They did win week two, absolutely eliminating the Giants' offense. That's the path to victory for them against Seattle.
Yeah, the Cowboys, the defense is going to have to win the day for them if they want to go on the road in Seattle and have success. Now, with their offensive line, I will say this, Nick. They played two road games to open up the season, so going back home to Seattle, sure, noise won't be a factor. Maybe that group communicates a little bit better, gives Russell Wilson a little more time. But when you mention the deficiencies along the offensive line, I'm looking at the offense as a whole. Who is Russell Wilson throwing the ball to?
Yep.
Doug Baldwin is hurt. Jimmy Graham is gone. When Will Disley is your leading receiver, it's not a good thing.
Favorite target.
It's not a good thing. I mean, I like Tyler Lockett, but that's about it. So, I mean,
Brandon Marshall's, I mean,
have a lot of help for Russell Wilson right now. So I understand when Pete Carroll says maybe Russell Wilson is trying to do too much. If you look at what he's working with, it's not exactly a Pro Bowl cast. So, I mean, I'm concerned about the Seattle Seahawks team right now. I don't know if they're going to be able to get it fixed because, to me, it's a personnel issue. It's not a scheme problem.
What about on the other side? What do we want to see from Dak? Dak ran the ball. I think he had 45 yards.
It was like, a career high
yep, for him. I think going into the season, they thought teams were going to spend so much time on Zeke that maybe he was giving him an opportunity to be able to do something else. He seems to play – the team does well when he runs the ball more. Do you expect to see that?
Well, what I am concerned about seeing from Dallas, what we need to see from Dallas if they're going to be anything other than a team that tries to beat you 17-16, some big plays. I mean, Tavon Austin, that 64-yard touchdown, that is not only the only big play they've had this year, it's the only medium-sized play they've had this year. Hmm. They don't have a single play greater than 20 yards all season except for that one. That's the fewest in the league, not surprising. And Zeke's got to get off. Mm-hmm. Like, Zeke is a great player. I know he's down one all-pro offensive lineman. Still got two other ones. Still got Lyle Collins out there who would have been a very potential first-round draft pick if not for what happened to him before the draft. You still have Connor Williams, a guy they drafted high this past year. Like, you have the opportunities. You should have the opportunities for Zeke to have a big game because I don't think Dak right now, where we sit here today, is anything more than an average game manager. Until I'm proven differently, that's where I believe he is now, and he obviously doesn't have the wide receiver help. I mean, they signed Bryce Butler this week.
Yeah.
Like, as if that's going to be a big addition. So if they're going to move the ball offensively, Zeke needs a big game, and they have to – the big game maybe, Canny, can lead to some big plays because that'll open up the play action for him.
Well, I think their formula will look a lot like it did on Sunday night, Jenna, to answer your question. I do think Dak Prescott has to be involved in this offense as a runner just because he hasn't proved that he can be a threat in terms of pushing the ball down the field in the vertical passing game, especially outside of the numbers. So in order for Ezekiel Elliott to get some rush lanes, you're going to have that quarterback as a threat to be able to hold the backside. So maybe you can create some natural cutbacks for Ezekiel Elliott. That's the one thing that it's hard for defenses to account for is the quarterback as a runner because it changes the math. So you don't necessarily have a free hitter on those run plays. And that's what Dak Prescott can bring to this offense, utilizing his legs. That's the only way I see them being consistent on offense, because what teams are going to do is exactly what the Carolina Panthers did in week one if Dak doesn't run the football, and that's load the box with an extra defender and force Dak to throw the ball, especially outside. He hasn't proven that he can beat you that way as a volume passer. So I think that's the Cowboys' formula this weekend up in Seattle. They got to use Dak as a runner.
Cowboys Seahawks, America's game of the week. Talk more about that. But coming up, let's get back to our big story. Last night's big Browns win. Did Baker Mayfield prove the Browns made the right pick with the top pick? That's next. First things first. Back here, first things first, former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott joins the show. What up, Bart?
What up?
Man, you were up late last night. Are you just going to leave me right here because you got stuff in your hand?
Tell people why.
You were up late last night doing TV on the Jets.
Looking at that bull crap.
Look at this suit. Oh, wow.
You got shiny suit man over here.
Oh, I'm about to read the eulogy of Tyrod Taylor.
Wow.
He was a good man.
You can't do that to a former Raven.
He was a good man. Come on, son. You're killing me, Petey.
Starting off on the right foot. Hey, in years past, a Jets-Browns meeting wouldn't quite be a must-see. But last night's game ended up featuring two rookie quarterbacks who've been chosen to lead their respective franchises to the promised land. Earlier, we saw what Baker Mayfield did for the Browns. On the other side, Sam Darnold, not as great, completed less than half his passes, throwing two picks, no touchdowns in the loss to Cleveland. He was outplayed and said as much afterwards.
For me, from my point of view, I just got to play better. Simple as that. You know, not acceptable the way that I played tonight, and I know that, but also got to take it like a man. You know, I'm just, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, responsible for, you know, some of the stagnant offense that we had. So, you know, I just got to play better. That's really it. Got to find completions and continue to do what I've been doing.
Let me just say that no rookie has had better post-game press conferences so far than Sam Darnold as far as honesty, telling it like it is, and taking it on the chin, taking it himself when he thinks it's his fault. But, Bart, do you think we overhyped Sam Darnold a little too soon?
Not at all. I think, you know, he says he has to perform better. I think the Jets have to do better. And when I'm talking about do better, I'm talking about play scheme, design. How many times can you throw a slip screen to Quincy Nunua on third down and not think that Greg Williams is going to make the adjustment? It was no creativity, not finding a way to get Robbie Anderson the ball. He has to hold on to the football. The second week in a row, costly penalty. I thought that really turned the tides. Middleton dropped the interception in the end zone. And also just not being able to get off the field on third down and not really making the adjustment to when, you know, Baker Mayfield came in to what they were trying to do offensively. You know, continue to try to blitz. The guys were gassed because it was punt, 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 turnover, punt. And you're still trying to blitz, not really going into a zone. They're playing a soft zone, trying to make, you know, Darnold work the ball down the field. And we're going all out. Guys are gassed. And then now you're leaving your outside guys on an island.
Let's just call it what it is, Bart. The Jets took their foot off the gas. They went up 14-0, and that's exactly what was happening. Isaiah Crowell had all those celebration penalties, and you saw the guys, Tremaine Johnson, taunting some of the guys.
That was a big penalty on Tremaine Johnson.
That was a huge penalty.
That's a turnover. And the Tremaine Johnson penalty, I thought it was
a
soft
penalty.
They were off
the field. Yeah, I'm like, come on.
I mean, if you didn't see it, I'm sorry to interrupt,
but just so people know,
Crowell obviously, listen, Crowell, you're going to get a flag for that every time. He used the football's toilet paper and threw it into the crowd. That's going to get you a flag. But despite that penalty on the kickoff, the coverage team did a good job, but they held him inside the 25. So they were okay there. But then they get off the field. Tremaine Johnson picks up the ball because it was a drop.
And he was on his sideline.
And hands it, was it to Jarvis? I'm not sure who it was. But he puts it in his chest. I didn't think you had to give him a 15-yard penalty there, but that gave the Browns new life, which led to 3 points.
Go ahead. And then you talk about the Mo Claiborne penalties on the first touchdown drive that they had against when he was holding, I think it was Antonio Callaway. One was in the field on a third down, which allowed for a first down. The other one came on the first two-point try, which they failed, and then they came back with Philly special.
That was a joke, though, too. That wasn't – I mean, come on. The guy's out of the pocket buying time. The guy's running two or three routes. I don't believe that was a penalty.
You can't hold hold the guy. You can't hold the guy. And it was clear that Mo Claiborne couldn't hold Antonio Callaway. That's the reality of it. But those two penalties ultimately ended up costing you. Now, the Jets defensively did everything that they needed to do at the beginning of that game. They even blocked a punt, which set it up score. When they have those things rolling, this is a much better football team. But when you get into the position where you ask your young quarterback to be the difference in the outcome of the game, I think that's where the Jets got in trouble. It's what happened against the Miami Dolphins last week, and you saw more of the same in the last two quarters plus of football.
Look at that.
How
many screen passes can you throw?
Well, if you're worried that you're going to throw interceptions throwing the ball downfield, that might be what you have to do. I am not going to overreact to this, but I'm not going to underreact to this. This is the second straight week that Sam Darnold has had critical turnovers. Week one, what?
That really wasn't his turn. He was trying to win the game late in the game. He's just trying to
hold
throw
on.
The ball.
You're down four with all three timeouts and 1:40 left. You do not have to force the ball into double coverage. Mm. He didn't see the guy there because the center got pushed into him. He made a bad decision. Last week, after they get a turnover, they're down 14 against Miami early second half. He throws an interception in the end zone.
That wasn't on him, though, Nick. That was on Terrell Pryor. The receiver's got to get his head around and catch the ball.
Okay.
The other turnover was on, the other pick was on him, but not that.
Okay, so we can, the other way to say this is pick which picks are on him, because we got four in the last 2 weeks to choose from.
I give him two.
Okay, well.
I mean, it's desperation time when you think.
Okay, you're right. This the one at the last play of the game, I don't care about it, because that was a situation where they had no timeouts. They only had, I think, 12 seconds. Yeah. I don't care about the one at the very end of the game. But the one, the Jets were not in great shape, but they were, you're down four. You have all three timeouts. You're driving. You're at, the 37-yard line. That's a terrible play. That's flatly a terrible play. Now, that doesn't mean he's not going to be a great player. But what it does mean is, like, you've got to own that. You said they were in a position where they're asking their young quarterback to go win them the game.
Yeah.
Well, that's the position Cleveland was in. They asked their young quarterback to come off the bench, down 14-0, go win them the game. And
they took the handcuffs off.
But Nick, you're saying that, but through the same lens, you have to look at it like this. That Cleveland Browns defense was able to flip field position. The Jets defense did that at the beginning of the game. That game didn't tilt until you saw the Denzel Ward turnover, which led to a touchdown. So you got to remember, it's about the defense being able to set the young quarterback up to have success. That didn't happen for the Jets after the first quarter of football last night.
They didn't adjust when Baker Mayfield came in.
Not at all.
Do anything differently.
And what they decided to do is say, okay, we got Middleton here, we got linebackers here, we're going to work the seams. And instead, they're still blitzing off the edge like they had success early in the first quarter,
never
first half,
anything.
And it never changed anything. And now you have Middleton running down the field up the seams with Landry. That was a huge play. Now they go empty, and they decide to put Avery Williamson on Duke Johnson, who's basically a receiver. They're sitting at the sticks on third. Well, CeCe's not here because he's always on sabbatical. I'm about to say, on 3rd and 10, what do, Chris? You sit at the sticks. They're bailing in cover three, and they're just running to the sticks, picking up first downs. You know, I think they never made the adjustment. They ran out of gas, and they kept putting their corners on an island. You can't do that. You know, you can't expect guys to still have the same juice to be blitzing in the second half. And guys, Tremaine Johnson off the edge. First thing that happened, soon as the offensive lineman faced him, he put the brakes on. What does that do? That puts your guy on the island.
Well, here's what I'll say, Bart. If I'm Ty Bowles and Casey Rogers, I'm going to go after Baker Mayfield in the second half, because I realized at the end of the first half, when I didn't, he was picking my team apart with those throws. Pinpoint throws to Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, and again, another 16-yard completion to Jarvis Landry. There should have been a first-down conversion on that third down before the field goal, but Antonio Callaway quit on the route, which was one of the incompletions that Baker Mayfield had. But I think they had to be more aggressive in that situation. It just didn't work out for them.
We can pick apart the Jets' defensive scheme. What's also true is, as you mentioned, they not only allowed just 21 points, but 7 of those points came on a super short field after the forced fumble. What's also true is this. They ran the ball for 107 yards. I thought Bilal Powell played well. I thought Crowell played all right. He had the touchdowns, but he wasn't very effective on a per-carry basis. What is the biggest reason the Jets lost that game? Their quarterback completed less than 50% of his passes, had no touchdowns, had 2 picks. Like, the biggest reason
they...
The numbers don't tell.
Listen, at that point, the game was over.
The game was... The, down four with almost 2 minutes left and three timeouts, the game is not over. Agreed. There's a lot of things the game is. Over is not one of them. Like, so this is not a verdict on Sam Darnold's career. It's not a verdict on Sam Darnold next week. But what we know is this. Week one, Darnold played excellent, given how the game started. He was 16 of 20 from that point forward. He helped rally his team early, and then Matt Stafford really gave the game away. Last week, he was mediocre, and last night, he was bad. Like,
He wasn't bad, man. This is an indictment on his receivers. Terrell Pryor didn't catch a pass to late in the game. Jermaine Kearse, I don't even know where he is. They're forcing the ball to Quincy Enunwa. How many screen passes, bubble screens on third down can you throw to Quincy Enunwa before you throw a slip screen where the receiver actually takes off and create a vertical threat? It was no adjustments at all. They can't find ways to get Robbie Anderson the ball. They either need to put him at a slot. I don't see any speedos over routes. He's a one-trick pony. They're just running him right up the field. For the second week in a row, he's had a costly turnover because he doesn't have ball security. Kearse isn't winning in the slot. The only one that's given him any consistency is Quincy Enunwa. You can't continue going to him, and they need to consider putting him either at X or Z, putting him outside and putting Robbie Anderson on the bench.
It's a shame you don't know anything about the Jets. But that was a really good
killing
guess.
Killing me, Pete.
Bart, stick around. Coming up, let's talk some Colts. Can they slow down Carson Wentz as he gets ready for his season debut? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First with Bart Scott. Carson Wentz returns to action this Sunday as the Eagles face Andrew Luck and the Colts. It'll be his first game action since tearing his ACL and LCL back in December of last season. Hey, speculate all you want about how he will move, look, throw, run, feel. All Carson knows is that he's expected to get out there and excited to play again.
I'm definitely going to cherish, running out of that tunnel. I'm going to cherish the time just finally being back out there with the guys after missing these games and the long rehab, everything. Like you kind of said, there's going to be a lot of emotions going on. But once the game starts, it's just football again.
It is, Bart, but not for the Colts, because the Colts, will they change their defensive game plan at all, knowing exactly who they've got and what they think that Carson Wentz might or might not be able to do in his first game back?
Well, you're going to believe that it's not going to be a lot of RPOs. I don't think they'll put him at risk. If he is, you can assume that he's going to give it every time. I'm putting a bunch of people at his feet. I'm making sure I attack the A-gaps. When we see Deshaun Watson come back, when we saw Brady come back,
Yeah. They
were afraid to put all that pressure on the front foot and leave it out there, to follow through. I'm putting people at his feet all day long and see how confident he is in it.
Well, here's the thing. With Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson said that he's not going to handle him with kid gloves, that he's going to be aggressive with the offense. But we all know that Doug Peterson is going to call the game accordingly, because this is the franchise quarterback's first game back coming off of a multi-ligament injury. So I think you're going to see some of the same elements that we saw with Carson Wentz in that offense last year, but the whole playbook won't be open for Doug Peterson and that Eagles offense. That being said, I think that Carson Wentz poses a significantly more dangerous threat to the defense of the Colts than Nick Foles ever could. And I think that the defense will be called accordingly. So there are going to be more opportunities for that passing game to get on track. Even though they don't have Alshon Jeffrey and the full complement of their weapons, I still think that there are enough playmakers on this Eagles offense with Carson Wentz where they can be productive and have a big day.
Agreed, but I'm lighting him up, and I'm lighting him up early. And I'm going to see how confident he is and see if he's going to get on those edges, if he's going to dare to run with the ball. I'm leaving short edges. I want to see if he's going to expose himself. And if he exposes himself, I'm taking him out low.
When you say you're lighting him up, you mean from a defensive call standpoint or from the player standpoint? So you're sending more?
Well, both. I'm sending more than they can block. And I'm saying, okay, I may give up a couple of yards early in the game to send a message, to see if you can get up. See if you can handle people at your feet. If you run and you get out, I'm chopping your legs out. I'm going to make you be thinking about, okay, they're coming at my legs. That's just the nature of the beast.
I would be shocked if they run a single RPO where Wentz actually has the run option. Like, it might be the look, but
it'll be play action.
It will be a play action and an RPO look. I understand what Doug Peterson's saying, and I understand what the player is saying. That would be foolish. Like, it would be. We saw Aaron Rodgers in his game back last week. Now, it's a very different injury. I get it. He actually didn't miss any time. Rodgers had to run at some point, but none of it was designed. None of it was, hey, we want to get Aaron Rodgers out on the edge. It was out of necessity. the thing that Carson has going for him is, even though this Colts defense up to this point this year, most notably because that rookie linebacker is playing so well, they are an improved defense. They don't have, to me, the personnel up front to, without sending extra people, right, get through that Eagles offensive line. Like, even as the Eagles have not been quite the Eagles so far this year, it hasn't been because their offensive or defensive line haven't been what we expected. So I don't think they can get pressure on Wentz the way the Vikings were able to on Rodgers. Like, the Vikings could just send four, right, and they could get home sometimes. I don't think the Colts, you're going to have a hard time for any defense doing that against the Eagles offensive line. The Colts front in particular, I just don't think has the personnel. So they are going to leave themselves exposed to the big plays. What the Colts have going for them, and what hurts Carson in this game, is those big plays, there's got to be someone on the other end of them. And when Mike Wallace done for the year, with Alshon Jeffrey injured, when your answer receiver is, let's bring back Jordan Matthews, that speaks to
Buffalo, by the way.
Oh, yeah, love Buffalo. Well, he expanded his family thanks to Buffalo. Like, you don't have as many big play threats down the field as you did last year when Wentz was playing.
No, but you'll still be able to move the ball. The guys that you do have, Aguilar, Ertz, and then Corey Clement, and then we'll see what happens with Jay Ajayi. You still have enough guys that can pose a threat, sure, to that Colts defense, especially if they get the one-on-one matchups that they're looking for. Now, one thing that's key to watching this ball game is how the game is actually going to be called from the Eagles side, because remember, the offensive coordinator last year with the Eagles, he's the head coach of the Colts right now. And right, then you look at John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach, he's in Minnesota. So how does that work in terms of the synergy between Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz in his first game back? That's something to keep an eye on. But again, I just think from top to bottom, this is just a much more talented Eagles roster. I don't think they're going to struggle with the Colts at home.
All that being said, and we can talk game plans and whatnot, as a player, take me inside Carson Wentz's mind right now. I mean, all eyes on him. This is a team that won a Super Bowl without him.
Yeah.
Okay, he wants to pick up where he left off last year. He was on a phenomenal streak. How were you going to be able to tell by watching him if he's playing a little scared, if he's a little trepidatious?
It's going to be important for him to take a hit early on for him to know, okay, I'm back. The knee's okay. We remember Dante Culpepper when he looked at the knee and saying, I'm good. But it's going to be some hesitation. It's going to be some trust issues with that knee. You know, the good thing is he has Jason Peters on the left side of him that's going to protect his blind side, so he should see it coming. You know, but, you know, it's going to be important to see that he has early success. They're going to have to get him in a rhythm, come out in the script, get the ball out of his hands early, maybe put him on some design rollouts to so he can see half of the rush, you know, and make sure that they establish a run early and often.
The thing for me with Wentz that I am most interested in is, given what Andrew Luck has said recently,
yep,
about – Andrew Luck was saying all the types of things Carson Wentz is saying. Mm-hmm. And I think Coach Mangini brought this up yesterday. It was a great point. And then he actually played, and then he was honest. Like, it wasn't until he actually played, got hit, dealt with it, that he said, man, I was depressed. I was worried. Yeah. I didn't know. Now, Luck's situation was different because he was misdiagnosed, and it was lingering, and it was multi-years.
And it was his shoulder as opposed to a knee.
Of course. So, but the point that I'm making is, even though it's a different process, we're not going to know how confident Carson Wentz actually feels about his leg until after this football game.
Yeah.
Because he has to say right now, feel great, everything's great. And then once he gets hit and comes through the game, hopefully fully healthy, then we might get a better idea of how apprehensive he truly is. Because right now, he and the coaching staff are all going to say these things. But what we're not going to see, I would be shocked if we see, oh, man, it looks like it's week 15 of last year. Like, they picked up where he left off. And that would have been a question even if he didn't get hurt. Like, if Wentz never got hurt, one of the big questions coming into this year would have been, can Carson Wentz duplicate his wonderful year two season? You add the injury and the time off and the new offensive coordinator and new quarterbacks coach and new expectations. Like, all of that makes the degree of difficulty harder. It's one of the reasons why I think being at home against Indy is a good way for him to start off this year.
All right, Bart, we will see you a little bit later on in the show, but coming up, does Hugh Jackson have a great reason for not already naming Baker Mayfield the starter? That's next on First Things First. On Sunday, it's a great slate of NFL action, starting with the 49ers taking on Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs. Then it's America's Game of the Week as Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys battle Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. It is all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area.
And for people in New Orleans, Atlanta, or Sunday Ticket subscribers, Bart Scott was lying when he said Chris Carter's on sabbatical. He's in Atlanta calling that game, so check that out. He did a great job in week one. Great game. Should be some great commentary from
Falcon
our guy, CeCe.
Saints. All right, we'll get to Hugh Jackson's big decision in a second, but first,
oh,
Temple's Rock Ya-Sin with an insane interception.
That's what's called ball skills right there. Tremendous hand-eye coordination.
I thought this was going to be, when the ball's in the air, and I know we're showing the highlight, I thought it was going to be one of those receiver plucks it off the defender's back.
But really, he did that all with his left hand as the ball is coming in from his left side. That's hard to do.
Baker Mayfield, Jarvis Landry, get used to this connection. What a catch. What a throw.
I mean, he plucks it off the defender's head. It's a great, the defender has his hand in between Jarvis's arms. Jarvis still comes down. But this was an elite throw, Canny.
That's just one of those Randy's after Randy Moss. That's one of those going up and getting it, and that's exactly what Juice did right there.
Hold on. Bless the connection didn't stop. This time, Jarvis Landry connects with Baker Mayfield for the two-point conversion.
I didn't know Jarvis was a lefty until this moment.
I didn't either. Imitation is the greatest form of flattery, though. Taking a page out of the Eagles' playbook. Philly special.
That's why Canny started imitating my little brooches or my little
lapel pins. You know your lapel flowers. Game is nowhere close to where I'm at.
Identical twins.
Wow, Canny.
Stop it.
All right. We going to talk.
All right.
Sticking with the big story in this game, Baker Mayfield came in for an injured Tyrod Taylor, impressed everyone, throwing for over 200 yards in a little more than a half of action. He also led the Browns to their first win since 2016. However, his head coach says the starting job isn't Baker's just yet.
Obviously, I like to watch the tape. Obviously, Baker did some great things. I mean, again, we don't play until next Sunday. We got some days. Let's not get into those debates tonight. You know, obviously, what he did tonight was outstanding for the football team and for his teammates and just the way he competed. But again, I have to watch the tape, and we'll go from there.
Words. Is there any doubt that it's going to be Baker Mayfield moving forward?
No, listen, of course Baker Mayfield's going to start week four for the Browns. Baker knows it. Hugh Jackson knows it.
Tyrod probably
Deep
knows
down,
it.
Tyrod Taylor knows it. So, of course, Baker's going to be the starter. But Hugh is being criticized, was criticized as soon as that aired, as soon as people saw it, for not announcing it right there. And by smart people. My pal Rich Eisen criticized him. Like, why? People that know football. And I don't understand the criticism. He can't tell Tyrod he lost his job while Tyrod is concussed and find out through the media. Like, the way he had, Tyrod has been a pro. Tyrod's a guy they brought in and they said, listen, you're going to be our starter throughout the year. And while maybe deep down Tyrod always knew it might not be all year, sure he didn't expect to lose the job week three. But that's what appears to have happened. He owes it to him to have a one-on-one conversation with him. Forget the fact that you might have a slight, albeit very slight, competitive edge. The longer you can make the Raiders, theoretically, have to prepare for both, even though I think the Raiders, as soon as the game is over against Miami, they're going to be preparing for Baker Mayfield. There's no benefit to announcing it right there except for appeasing the fans and the media. He owes it to the man who was his starting quarterback to talk to him face-to-face. So, yes, Baker's the week four starter, but no, Hugh shouldn't have announced it right there. I think he handled that perfectly.
You have to have respect for the incumbent, the starting quarterback, who, oh, by the way, is helping Hugh Jackson and John Dorsey turn the page on the culture of that organization. To me, that was the biggest challenge for this regime coming into this season, and you're seeing a different Cleveland Browns team. They're far more competitive than I remember them being in recent memory. And so when you look at this guy, Baker Mayfield, leading the team to their first win in nearly two seasons, like, I mean, it's obvious that he's going to be the starting quarterback moving forward. He was the number one overall pick. It was going to be sooner rather than later. This just created a natural opportunity for that to happen because Tyrod got knocked out of the game.
And Tyrod, listen, Tyrod was, I think, mistreated in Buffalo. I still think the fans in Buffalo, I mean, in his career there, he had 51 touchdowns to 16 picks and took them to the playoffs. He was good those 3 years in Buffalo. He's been bad these three games in Cleveland.
He has not been good here in Cleveland.
I mean, that's the reality. Like, people need to be able to admit what they're seeing. In the first game of the year, we were all tied up in, oh, it's the Browns' best start in 14 years at 0-0-1. We were caught up in that. And in week two, we were caught up in, oh, my God, Zane Gonzalez. Week one, Tyrod was very bad. The only quarterback in the NFL worse than Tyrod in week one was Nate Peterman. In week two, he was better, but threw a critical late interception while the Browns had a lead. And yesterday, he was 4-14 for 19 yards, and they have two first downs?
Two first downs with him in the game?
Like, he opened the door. We talked in the preseason that Baker played well, but Tyrod kept playing well even better and kept the door closed. Tyrod opened the door wide open, and then Baker, if Baker had come in and played really poorly and they lost to the Jets, it's a different discussion. Mm-hmm. Baker comes in and they win. Tyrod opened the door. Baker walked right through it.
And see, for me, that's where it begins. Does the team respond when Baker Mayfield came in the game? And they absolutely did. They scored on four of his first five possessions as the starting quarterback. So you're seeing, because he's good in recognizing situations, also recognizing coverages and having the ability to execute, I think that takes that offense to a whole nother level.
Do you think the Jets, a little bummed they knocked Tyrod out of the game? maybe in hindsight?
Just a little bit. You know what? Maybe we should have been a little more careful when we hit Tyrod Taylor. Just lay him down. It kind of reminds me of a story that my former defensive line coach, the late Clarence Brooks, told me when he was with the Miami Dolphins in 2001. Second to last game of the season, they needed to beat the Falcons to get qualified for the playoffs. And the starting quarterback was Chris Chandler, but the guy that was on the bench behind him was Michael Vick. And all week long, all of the Dolphins defenders were talking about is, when you get to Chris Chandler, make sure you lay him down. We don't want to have to deal with the guy coming off the bench. Well, somebody didn't get the memo in that Dolphins locker room on defense, and ultimately
they knocked Chandler out of the game
in the second quarter. And then this guy, Michael Vick, comes in and basically has them knocking on the door, a goal line possession at the end of the game. And the goal line stand, the Dolphins ended up stopping them, and they go to the playoffs. But long story long, it's about those guys having that talent to take those offenses to another level. Baker Mayfield is that guy for the Cleveland Browns.
Do you think Hugh Jackson makes the switch if Tyrod Taylor doesn't come out with a concussion?
I think that they were going to switch quarterbacks at halftime. I do. I think that was the offense was so inept, and the Jets weren't pulling away. The Jets were up 14-0, but you could see that there were going to be opportunities. You could see Darnold wasn't super sharp, and aside from an effective running game in the first half, I didn't think the Jets scored one of their touchdowns on that blocked punt on the short field. They only had one sustained drive. I think that you had to take into account that while the Browns organization has a losing culture to a degree, you have more new players on the Browns than any other team in the league. And if you start off the year by tying Pittsburgh when you have a +5 turnover margin, the next game you lose to the Saints thanks to four missed kicks, and then you're at home favored with a crowd that at the beginning of the game seemed like a playoff crowd. The crowd was amazing early. And by midway through the second, the crowd was silent. I think you run the risk of even the new guys being like, man, it's just different here. You just can't win here. And so I think he would have gone to Baker at halftime even if Tyrod had been healthy.
No, he might have, just because you recognize you got to have some winning to support the messaging coming from the front office and the coaching staff. Those guys got to buy in. They've got to have the results actually on the field. And so you're right. Maybe this change was going to happen at some point in this game, maybe at halftime. Eventually, it was going to be sooner than later with Baker Mayfield, just because of a talent perspective. He's the guy that gives them the best chance to win games. And everybody on that team recognizes
that. But that was the exact thing we heard when we heard the reason why Tyrod Taylor was going in, because he's the guy that gives them the
chance
to win games.
But they didn't get the Tyrod from Buffalo.
Right.
Like, Tyrod has
not
been as good.
Somehow it was a different player than we saw last year.
He hasn't been as good, and they haven't synced up offensively. Now we'll see how Baker looks the next week. The other thing that Hugh Jackson, if I'm Hugh, I'm at least thinking about at halftime is, if we lose this game and I don't go to Baker Mayfield, you know what the discussion is in the local media and the national media? It's not just about Baker Mayfield.
It's
about Hugh Jackson being 1-33-1 as a head coach of an NFL team and how much longer he needs to be the head coach of an NFL team. That discussion now, of course, does not exist.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, who prevails in a must-win game between the Texans and the Giants? That's next on First Things First. Time for stories to start your morning. Tom Brady is 4-0 against the Lions in his career, outscoring Detroit 127-66. Now Brady's got a shiny new toy in Josh Gordon, who is trending towards playing on Sunday. Nick, what do you expect to see from Brady and Josh Gordon against the Lions defense?
Listen, I think Brady and the Pats offense is going to be effective against the Lions defense that has not yet found its footing. I don't think Josh Gordon's going to be a major part of that effectiveness. However, I do think he's going to play. I think he'll be active. I think he'll probably get 10 to 15 snaps. But I think anyone expecting a big game from Josh Gordon, that is underestimating how much work it takes to get familiar with any NFL offense, much less the Patriots offense.
Yeah, the Patriots passing game is predicated on having chemistry and then Tom Brady having a feel for how his receivers are going to maneuver within the coverages and being able to know where they're going to find the spots in the zones that are open. But in looking at this matchup, I expect that Bill Belichick is going to do what he does to all of his apprentices, which is school them, and that's exactly what's going to happen on Sunday night going up against Matt Patricia and the Lions. It's been defense optional for the Lions for the first 2 weeks. I don't see that changing in this matchup with the Pats.
Something to watch for Matt Patricia. Game one, hat backwards. Game two, hat forwards. Game three, maybe no hat. We'll see.
I was just thinking. I wonder what Matt Patricia's going to wear. Aaron Rodgers missed practice yesterday, but is expected to play Sunday against Washington. Keep in mind, he missed practice last week, played well against the Vikings. Nick, what do you expect from Rodgers in this matchup with Washington?
I expect Rodgers to look good. I thought he played, even though they were not good in the red zone against Minnesota. That's why they didn't win in addition to that late call on Clay Matthews. But aside from that, that offense moved the football against a great defense. Washington's got, I think, a good defense, actually, but not the Minnesota Vikings. They have a good front, certainly not the Minnesota Vikings front. So I think Rodgers will be even more effective than he was last week, and last week he was very effective.
Yeah, and then another week removed from that sprained knee. We'll see how that progresses, see if it starts to feel better. He hadn't been practicing all week, so hopefully he starts to turn the corner with that injury. Now, I know he's questioning whether or not he's going to make it worse, but after you get away from that injury, the more time you have, the better it's going to be. So I expect to see Aaron Rodgers get better as the season progresses.
One quick note, Washington's top four in the NFL in percentage of times they've been blitzing. Blitzing Aaron Rodgers, even a hampered Aaron Rodgers, has never been an effective strategy. I think it was 9 of 9 against the Vikings blitz last week.
All right, moving on to America's Game of the Week, Cowboys and Seahawks. Not quite the start either team wanted. Dallas hoping to ride their momentum after beating the Giants last week. Seattle, they're just trying to avoid going 0-3 to start the season. Nick, how well do the Cowboys match up against the
Seahawks? From a defensive perspective, the Cowboys are going to match up very well against most teams, particularly teams with a weak offensive line. I think the one question mark in the Cowboys defense, even though they've played well up to this point, is their secondary. But Seattle's got nobody that scares you in the second as far as receivers.
Yep.
You mentioned Russell's favorite target this year has been Walt Disley, a rookie tight end.
Walt Disley.
No, not Disley. I said Disley, but my apologies. Will Disley. W. Disley. The famous W. Disley.
Mickey Mouse will be guarding
The point is that the Seattle does not scare you offensively.
Yep.
My question for the Cowboys is, can they get any big plays? One play this year of greater than 20 yards. If Zeke starts to be more effective, maybe that opens up the play-action pass for some of those big plays.
Well, here's the thing. I think the Dallas Cowboys offensively look to take a shot early like they did against the Giants on Sunday night. See if you can get the game to tilt in your favor because you recognize the strength of that Dallas Cowboys team is not the offensive line right now in the running game. It's the defensive line and those guys getting after the quarterback. If you can get a lead early and then rely on that offense to be able to control time of possession, you're going to force the Seattle Seahawks to do exactly what they don't want to do, which is drop back 35 to 40 times. You see how that offensive line has protected Russell Wilson. 12 sacks in the first two games. That's unacceptable.
Jimmy G and the 49ers head to Kansas City. They'll face Pat Mahomes and the Red Hot Chiefs. Mahomes has thrown 10 touchdowns this year. Not bad for two games. Nick, do the Chiefs keep rolling against the 49ers?
Absolutely. I didn't pick the Chiefs last week. I thought they were not going to be able to. I thought they'd need 40 to beat the Steelers. They did need 40 to beat the Steelers. They just got it. The Niners do not have the weaponry to keep up with the Kansas City Chiefs, and I don't think the Niners are going to be able to take advantage of a porous Chiefs defense. Jimmy G has the second highest interception rate of any quarterback in the league. Pat Mahomes, of course, has yet to throw an interception. So, I think this is a mismatch. And First game Pat Mahomes will have ever played in Arrowhead. Week 17 last year was on the road. First 2 weeks this year on the road.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough environment for that 49ers offense. That offensive line is loud in Chiefs Kingdom, so this will be their first home game. They'll be fired up. But, Nick, you talked about the 49ers not having the weapons to be able to match up with the Kansas City Chiefs. Very few teams do have the weapons to be able to match up with the Chiefs' offense. They're that talented, and I look for them to continue to roll. If Pat Mahomes can continue to be as accurate as he's been with the football through the first 2 weeks, I mean, this is going to be tough to match points with this group.
These last two teams you talked about, Dallas and San Francisco, surprised neither of them trumped the Pats offer for Josh Gordon because they need downfield playmakers to take a flyer on him.
All right, let's end with the Battle of Los Angeles. The Chargers come in averaging 445 yards per game, third in the NFL. They will look to keep up with the Rams' high-powered offense that has them off to a 2-0 start. But Rams' second-year head coach Sean McVay isn't impressed just yet.
You ask people, you know, how many teams were 2-0 last year, and nobody could tell you because it's not important because it doesn't matter right now. What's important is that we've got to get better every single day. We've got to do a great job of getting ready for an excellent football team. And while I think there is a confidence and a belief and an expectation in terms of what guys think they're capable of doing, that humility that we talk about where they understand they got to earn it every single day in order to put themselves in a position to play to the best of their ability against an excellent team on Sunday at 1 o'clock.
All right, Chris, if the Rams want to jump out to an early 3-0 lead this season, what will they need to do against the Chargers?
I think they're going to have to continue to do what they've been doing in the Todd Gurley era with Jared Goff, and that's run the football. Todd Gurley is the focal point of that offense, so I think it has to start there. That's how you set up opportunities for Jared Goff in the passing game. I like the complement of receivers that they have between Kupp, Woods, and Cooks. I think that's a good group, but it has to start with Todd Gurley being able to get those touches to create opportunities for everybody else. That Chargers team is not a bad football team.
No.
It's not a bad football team. And I think that when, even though they're shorthanded on the defensive side of the ball, they do have some talented playmakers. Derwin James, I think, is key
amongst
them.
He's been excellent.
He's outstanding. I mean, from a talent perspective, I mean, he's right up there with the likes of guys like Sean Taylor. I mean, he's that good. He's a special talent. But I think for this Rams offense, if they want to make sure that they can have success, it's got to start by being able to run the football.
All right, so oddly enough, last week, Arizona, who got blown out by the Rams, blanked by them, they held Todd Gurley in check, relatively speaking. If you're a fantasy player, you might be like, no, they didn't. He had like 25 points. Well, he had 3 touchdowns, but only had 40 yards rushing. Now, to the expense of that was big plays down the field. We have seen Brandon Cooks has been an excellent addition. So I do think that you have to pick your poison with the Rams. This is why right now they're the best team in the league. What are you going to stop? Okay, you want to focus on the outside threats. You mentioned Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and Brandon Cooks. No problem. We got the best running back in the league, arguably. We will eat you up behind Andrew Whitworth and a pretty damn good offensive line. Mm-hmm. You want to focus on Gurley? No problem. We will eat you up with Brandon Cooks going deep, Cooper Kupp going over the middle, and Robert Woods intermediate routes. Like, this is a pick-your-poison team. This is a team. There's a reason why since the first half, the end of the first half of week one, they played 6 quarters of football. They've outscored their opponents 57-0. So let's focus on the to nothing side of that, the Rams defense, because that's where the Chargers are going to have to win. If the Chargers are going to compete in this game, potentially win this game, it's going to be because Phillip Rivers, who quietly this year.
Outstanding. He's outstanding
he's been
this
great.
Year.
Great. He's completing almost 75% of his passes, mm-hmm. has a passer rating of about 120,
yeah.
which is basically make believe. Like
6 touchdowns to 1 interception.
He's been yeah. great. And so that's the way they are going to have to try to beat the Rams. I do not think, as good as Derwin James is and as good as Melvin Ingram is, they don't have Joey Bosa, obviously, and I don't think they're going to be able to hold the Rams under 24 points, right? Like, I would say if you hold the Rams to 24-27 right now, you probably feel decent about it. Mm-hmm. The Chargers are going to have to score with the Rams in this game, and I don't know what the Chargers are because they ran into the Kansas City Chiefs in week one, and the Chiefs' offense right now is moving it on everyone.
Yeah.
Week two, they played the worst team in the league in Buffalo. Now they play the best team in the league in Los Angeles. So it's hard to get a real gauge on how good are the Chargers.
All right, let's move on to the Giants and the Texans. Both had high expectations this season. Giants and their shiny new offensive weapons. Texans getting Deshaun Watson back to go with those incredibly potent defensive weapons. And yet, both teams 0-2. Both teams struggling to get going. They will face each other this Sunday in your classic Week 3 must-win. Odell Beckham knows the stakes facing him in Houston.
going to now, so it's just like we gotta win. But it's not like the whole season's over if you don't. It's just you want to win games. So we game planning. We got some good stuff in, and we got to come up with a victory.
All right, Nick, the one stat that you always talk about, if you start a season 0-2, you got a 10% chance. Is that what it is of making the playoffs?
Thereabouts, yep.
What about 0-3?
Well, nobody's done it in 20 years.
Exactly.
So, listen, my pal Odell, he's lying there. He knows he's lying there when he's like, it's not like our season's over. He has to say that because he knows they could lose. Mm-hmm. And you never want to say a game, if we don't win this game, our season's over, unless it's an elimination game where your season's actually over, because you got another 13 games to play and you don't want people to be able to say, well, what are you guys playing for at this point? But this is to use a wrestling term, this is a loser leaves town match.
Yeah.
The loser of this football game, whatever expectations their fan base had for the year, you have to change them.
Yeah, they can go ahead and schedule when they're going to have their car shipped back home. The loser of this game. That's exactly what it is. It's a wrap after this. Your season is going to end on the last day of the regular season.
And this is the only game that is like that in the NFL this week, because it's the only game between 0-2 teams. And you've got two teams that right now both have to feel like, man, we shouldn't be 0-2.
Right.
The Texans lost a game to Blaine Gabbert. That should never happen at any level,
yeah,
at any point in time since he's been in the league. And the Giants got to look at him and be like, man, we had our opportunities. Week one against Jacksonville, Blake turns the ball over. The team had been 2-18 in their last 20 games when Blake throws a pick. We can't take advantage. Week two against the Cowboys. Cowboys offense made one play, and we couldn't match that.
Mm-hmm.
But none of it matters when you're 0-2. What matters is how do you get that first win? And if you're right now the New York Giants, I think their defense can be fine. The question is, can their offense move the ball at all? I know the offensive line's bad, but Eli's got to find a way to get the ball in effective positions in his playmakers' hands. Now, part of that is on Pat Shurmur and the offensive staff to scheme those guys to where you can't have Saquon Barkley have 14 catches for 80 yards. Like, that can't happen. You can't just be dinking and dunking every play. But the Texans' defense can get got. And I want to see if the Giants can do it.
Well, yeah, and that's the big thing, right, to see if the Giants' offensive line can hold up just enough for Eli Manning to be able to push the ball down the field. But, Nick, you mentioned it. When you looked at that Dallas Cowboys game against the Giants, the Cowboys, they played top-down coverage. They were content with allowing Eli Manning to have checkdowns and saying that you're going to have to throw 10 of those in order to score a touchdown. And the Giants weren't able to consistently put together drives because Eli Manning wasn't kept upright. He wasn't kept clean by his O-line. But both of these offensive lines are awful. I mean, these two quarterbacks are at the top of the league in pass attempts when pressured.
Yep.
Deshaun Watson is one. Eli Manning is four. So ultimately, it becomes a matter of which quarterback is equipped to deal with their offensive line not being able to hold up in protection. And the answer to that is Deshaun Watson. I do think the Texans have significantly more pressure on them coming into this game just because of where Bill O'Brien is with this franchise. It's about time for him to start doing some winning down there.
Here's the only thing. I totally agree with you in theory, and I'm very critical of Bill O'Brien. The Texans, I think, foolishly gave him a long-term extension this offseason. And so he has the job security, even if his performance has not warranted it. The other thing for the Giants in this game, this year, in the first half, they have 6 points and 175 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the second half, their offense has at least had a pulse. Typically, they have been trailing in those second halves. They've got to get off. I mean, you don't have a first half touchdown this season. You're averaging less than 90 yards in each first half so far. Every major statistical category offensively, Giants are bottom five in the league.
Yeah.
Like, you can't win that way. And I heard Odell this week say, well, there's no reason we can't score 35 points per game. With respect to Odell, they haven't scored 30 points in a game.
In 34 games.
In 34 football games.
That's how long
it was. The Browns' winless streak is the Giants' non-30-point streak. Like, that's where they've been at.
And this isn't a team where they're like, yeah, their offense will be pretty good. We'll see what, you know, we'll see what he like. This is a team that spent their second overall pick on a running back. This is a team that paid Odell Beckham Jr., arguably the best wide receiver, if not up the top three in the league, paid him a ton of money. Like, they've got the weapons. I know their offensive line isn't great, but the Texans' offensive line isn't great either. This is the week where they have to show Giants fans what they can do with those
weapons. Well, they retool with a quarterback that's not mobile. So, I mean, Deshaun Watson has the tools to deal with a bad offensive line. Eli Manning never was a mobile quarterback, so you realize that you had to protect him. They tried to rebuild the offensive line this offseason, but the makeover didn't go according to plan. Pat Shurmur did it a couple of years ago with the Minnesota Vikings, and you saw how that worked out for them last season. I thought the Giants probably were trying to go in the direction of what Shurmur did in Minnesota. It just hasn't worked out because Nate Solder is not one of the best left tackles in the league, but they're paying him like it. Will Hernandez is still a rookie. And Eric Flowers, even though they moved him from left tackle to right tackle, he's still a turnstile. So that's the reality. The offensive line is bad. And when you start talking about trying to design schemes for your offense to be effective, it's no easy answer when your offensive line can't line up and block anybody, not just in the passing game, but in the running game as well.
And Saquon had the flash play in week one against Jacksonville. That is one thing that could help the offensive line, that could help Eli, is if Saquon can have an effective, not just the first game's 18 for 106, but there's different ways to get to that 106. He got there with the one giant play. If he can have a game where you give him the ball 15 to 18 times, he's getting you 5-plus yards per carry. That's going to open things up for Eli. It's going to make it harder for the defense to bring just a consistent pass rush on him.
Yeah, you got to have balance on offense, and he needs to understand the value of a 4-yard run. Been hitting the backfield a lot of time because of the offensive line, but it also can't be that stutter steps. He's got to be more decisive in the run game so you can give Eli Manning some balance, because without it, your offense is not going to be able to consistently move the ball.
In the Giants' favor, this is without question the weakest defense they've played. Jacksonville's excellent. Dallas's front is excellent. Mm-hmm. Houston theoretically is supposed to have an excellent front. They haven't shown it, and J.J. Watt is not J.J. Watt anymore. The back is still the back. And so this would be their best opportunity to make some moves on offense.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, Antonio Brown speaks up after his drama-filled week. Wait to hear what he had to say next. First things first. Back here with Bart Scott, we are going viral. Baker Mayfield came in for an injured Tyrod Taylor last night and rallied the Browns to a 14-point come-from-behind win. But the real reason for the rally might have been in the stands. Introducing the Browns Rally Possum, which is apparently a thing that happens in Cleveland.
Only in Cleveland, man.
Yep.
And what's rally this dude possum doing?
It's all fun and games.
Is it
you get rabies.
Possum or an opossum?
It's spelled opossum. It's pronounced possum.
Possum.
How are you picking this dude up, man?
I don't even understand that. He's way too comfortable.
Man, that thing
possum
could be rabid.
Yeah, I'm saying you get rabies, get them 12 shots in the navel, and it's all fun and games.
I mean, what?
I'm sure it's not a rabid opossum.
How are you sure, Jenna? Tell me.
That's a great question.
Because I have more faith in
like
the intelligence
bear
level of the common Browns fan.
Oh, you think he's a doctor?
They're Browns fans, Jenna. That should tell you that you're not dealing with the brightest folks.
I'm just saying.
That's unnecessary shade on the good people of Cleveland. However,
I play for the Ravens, so I don't feel bad.
I'm just curious. I'm not trying to team up on you. But do you think
this will be a first?
You have the ability to identify rabid, non-rabid possums? Because I don't have that
Where
ability.
Do you think you get a rabid possum from?
The same place you get a regular possum from. A possum family. I don't know.
How do you get that in the building?
That's the other thing. Come on.
Like, how do you get that past security?
Yeah, man.
I don't feel safe.
Man, no. And that's a big possum, too. Baby possum.
And don't they bite?
Yes, rabies.
That's the whole point, Jenna.
Now you're coming
around. I'm still on your side.
It's got claws.
Anyway.
What's wrong with the dog? Was the dog not enough?
Well, they didn't want, man. Whatever.
I don't understand.
The new era, remember? So in case you missed this, Bart, in case you missed any of the drama in Pittsburgh this week, I'm going to fill you in. Okay, so Antonio Brown tweeted trade me and then didn't show up to practice Monday. Then he got disciplined. Le'Veon Bell still isn't there. Now fans in Pittsburgh are frustrated with head coach Mike Tomlin. Needless to say, frustrating times for the Steelers. Just ask Antonio Brown.
But obviously, I don't want to be traded. You know, I'm still grateful to put on my uniform, grateful to be a part of this organization. I don't take that for granted. Are we losing the game? Are we getting beat by 40? We haven't won a game yet. For me, as a Steeler, that's unacceptable. You know, I'm not on the sideline begging for the ball or making statements like you guys make. I'm pissed off. We're losing. We suck.
You just tied the game.
James Conner just tackled me.
Now, you guys make assumptions about my emotion. You guys don't know me at all. You guys just write what you think gonna get hits. Between me and you, everyone in locker know what I stand for, know what I'm about. You know, I'm committed to this program, this organization. I'm fully here. I go to work every day. I'm about my business, and I don't take it for granted. You know, my business is winning here. I come here to win. And to win, winning, you damn right I'm pissed off.
Your facial expressions ran the gamut of emotions through that soundbite. What do you not buy into what Antonio Brown is saying?
No, I do, but the end is near. I think we're seeing the end of an era. Their window is closing. I think he's starting to be his mortality. He understands no Le'Veon Bell. Ben has teetered on retirement for the last couple of years. They have no defense. They can't stop anybody. They have to win a shootout. Ben's holding on to the ball, and when he does that, turnovers come, sacks come, and eventually concussions come.
Let me ask you about their defense, because we know what the numbers are. Up until Shazier got hurt, they were allowing 17 a game. Since Shazier got hurt, so the end of last year, into this year, it's 28 a game. That is second worst in the league. Their rush defense in that stretch, third worst in the league. Their red zone defense is an abysmal, giving up touchdowns, 85% of red zone drives. That's worse than the NFL by far. But it can't. They had an offseason to figure out the Shazier injury. And they've got personnel.
They don't have the cap space to fill it. Listen, whenever you're running a 3-4, you have to have an impact player at linebacker and at safety. When you think about all the great 3-4 defense, they even just look at the organization, the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, you know, from James Ferrier to Larry Foote to Polamalu. Yeah. You know, you have to have people that can navigate their zone type of scheme. And now what's happening is they can't get the pressure with the zone blitzing, and it's creating tremendous voids, and they can't stop the run. You know, the first thing that the Pittsburgh Steelers always been about was making you one-dimensional, and they can't do that right now.
Because they've got the other, because I'm glad you mentioned inside linebacker and safety, because the personnel everywhere else
is pretty damn good.
I like Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt.
Yes.
I like Bud Dupree, T.J. Watt.
Bud Dupree has been a bust. I mean, you just have to put it with it.
I think that's
strong. Would you call him James Harris?
No,
there's a gap.
How many of those guys are there out there?
Would you call him Joey Peasy?
No, he's not Joey Porter.
So they brought him in first-round draft pick to be an impact player. How many sacks? He's been a disappointment.
Okay, so maybe he hasn't been exactly what they hoped he would be. I think bust is too strong.
Yeah,
but regardless, T.J. Watt has been an impact player. And so I like their personnel. I know they haven't had Joe Hayden, but what I'm not mentioning there are inside linebacker and safety. And you're saying for the defense they run, defense you were that type of defense very successful in, that 3-4, that's what they need. So maybe that might unlock part of the reason, because the defense doesn't have the personnel that says, even without Shazier, that they would be this bad.
Yeah, they're going to struggle with direct runs. That's runs in between the tackles. And, of course, those inside linebackers, they haven't found somebody to fill the Shazier void. Now, in terms of safety, they burned a first-round pick on Edmonds, the safety from Virginia Tech, but you saw him get stiff-armed by Kareem Hunt at the goal line on a receiving touchdown, and that was bad.
So, get out the club.
You know what you're dealing with, a guy that can't necessarily step in and be an impact player in the deep middle of that field. And, Nick, we talked about it earlier. If you can't control the middle of the field, it's going to be hard to play defense. That's exactly where the Pittsburgh Steelers are. So, in terms of what they're going to have to do to win games as a team, their offense is going to have to win the day for them. That means being able to win shootouts. You're going to have to match points with a lot of teams. Now, your next four games, you're on the road at Tampa on Monday night, then you've got Baltimore and Atlanta at home, and then on the road at Cincinnati before the bye week. Now, outside of Baltimore, you're not talking about murderer's row with those defenses. So maybe you can do enough, go 3-1 during that stretch, get to the bye week at 3-2-1, give this team a chance to reset, and then, of course, get you an opportunity to be a few weeks closer to getting Le'Veon Bell back. Yeah. I think that's what this team has to focus on right now, because with all the distractions that's going on, this team has lost its focus and lost sight of the goal, which is to try to be one of those top two AFC teams and get a bye week in the first round of the playoffs so you can have a chance to compete for a championship.
They're done. They're done. This is the best we've ever seen of the Steelers. This era is over with. And Le'Veon Bell is the guy that closes the door. He's the guy that runs the clock out. He's the guy in the tough situations that you can give the ball to. He's going to find you 2 yards. They don't have a closer anymore. And without a closer, you can't be successful.
But Bell is going to come back. After the 10th game, he's got to come back because he's got to play six to get the accrued season.
But what does that put them?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They've got to give them, they got to buy themselves some time. That's why I'm saying you got to get to the bye week and try to reset this thing.
Did you think they were done last year after they not only lose to Chicago, but they get beat 30-9 to Jacksonville to fall to 3-2? Because Big Ben was old, not quite as old. Like,
but they've lost their identity, and their identity that they were the bullies. And now they can't bully anymore. No, people don't respect them. It's not that fear factor when you go into Pittsburgh where you play the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know you can get the bend if you play tight coverage and you just four-man rush, he'll hold on to the ball. Antonio Brown is exceptional, but without Le'Veon Bell, they can't be impact because now you're not respecting the box. So now you're putting, you know, safeties over the top of Antonio Brown. You're mixing up the coverages. You're bracketing him, and you're manning up on Juju.
I think that I think we're going to look back on the beginning of this year similar to how we look back
Tomlin's
on the beginning
job
of last
is in
year.
Agreed.
Say that last part again.
Tomlin is, I'm telling you, they're starting to think that the inmates are running the asylum. And it's been just too many things coming out of that locker room.
All right, well, listen, I understand that that is one of the beliefs in the local media in Pittsburgh. I think that's an absurdity.
Yeah.
There's two coaches in NFL history who have won more games than Mike Tomlin through 11 years. There's zero coaches in NFL history who have more 10-win seasons than Mike
He's
Tomlin through 11 years.
He's never had a losing season.
He's
correct
never
me
had a losing season.
But listen, you know, I was there when Brian Billick got fired. And, you know, we had just had a successful season. He had just got an extension as well. But sometimes after 10 years, the message goes old. And he's speaking the same message. And listen, I love Tomlin.
You say that, Bart, but there's so much turnover in the NFL. I mean, you're only keeping guys around 4 or 5 seasons anyway. I look at Mike Tomlin's situation right now, and, yeah, it doesn't look good because you have a lot of guys that are creating distractions for your football team. But if you look at the landscape of the AFC, this team is right there in terms of talent and being one of the best teams in that conference. They just got to get focused and back on football.
Fool's gold, man.
I'm going to put this down as far as my prediction. We're going to look back and everything's going to be fine in Pittsburgh in 6 weeks. The week one, they lose a game in Cleveland, or they tie a game in Cleveland where Big Ben turns the ball over five times. They were -5 in the turnover battle. And you're supposed to lose that game.
Yes.
Teams were going into that game 4-132-1 in those, or 4-132 in those situations. Yeah. They became the one. Then they play Kansas City, which might be the best team in the AFC. And they scored.
They can't stop anybody either.
Okay, I understand Kansas City can't stop anyone, but that was.
Nobody can stop them.
Right. They were down 21-0. They tie the game, and they're without Le'Veon Bell. The Steelers are going to win double-digit games. They are going to win their division. And by the end of the year, they are going to have Le'Veon Bell back. Like, that doesn't mean that they are going to have a good enough defense to win the Super Bowl. It doesn't mean they're going to make the Super Bowl, which they haven't done since the fourth year Tomlin was there. But the idea that the era is over, the era might be over at the end of this year. I don't think the era is over yet in Pittsburgh.
They've had 3 coaches in the last 50 years for the Steelers. Mm-hmm. It's not like Mike Tomlin is on the hot seat, although this is a really bad look right now.
Bart, stick around. We got to take a break. Coming up, the Baker Mayfield era has arrived. That's next on First Things First.
Bart Scott's putting his flag in.
Coming out hot.
I'm telling you, man.
Back here with Bart Scott, we are going viral. Baker Mayfield helped to end the Browns' 635-day winless streak with a win over the Jets last night. And Cavaliers guard J.R. Smith was willing to give the shirt off
Sweezy.
His back for the win.
I'm telling you, Browns win tonight, I'm taking my shirt off again. I'm not wearing no shirt if the Browns win tonight. For sure. For sure, we out here. Come on, man. Come on. It's over. Let's go. Let's go. We out here. No shirt shorty. We out here. Let's go. We all the way.
JR still on the team?
He is. He is.
Just came out with a children's book, too.
Listen, JR's a great dude. I love JR. I love JR. And this is part of.
Only man I see wear jogging pants at the strip club.
That's okay.
I'm not even going to touch that one.
Here's the thing.
So many questions.
JR is still trying to, let's say, make up for his game one of the NBA Finals blunder and get back in the good graces of Cavs fans. And so this is step one in that. JR's been quiet on all social media, or at least on Twitter, since the end of the NBA season. Now he's coming back into the fold.
Nick, what are the odds of JR having a little Henny in his cup?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And God bless him. Shout out to JR Smith, man.
Speaking of the Browns.
At least he knew the score.
Absolutely.
Baker Mayfield took over late in the first half after Tyrod Taylor left with a concussion, and Baker was great, throwing for over 200 yards, completing 17 of his 23 passes. He led the Browns to a touchdown on the game-winning drive with just over 2 minutes left to go. A new era has begun in Cleveland. Here's Baker after the game.
You know, you got to feel the energy of the crowd, how badly they wanted it as well. You know, we got to play for each other, but at the same time, this city does deserve it. But we got to have that mindset of going to get it no matter what's happening. And so it felt great. I've just been waiting for my moment, been patient. You know, I've been in a good opportunity, put in a good situation with guys around me, veteran QBs and great coaches that I can learn from. You know, it was never whining or complaining about playing time, just, you know, want the team to win, and no matter what the cost is.
All right, Bart, you watched this game. What did you think of Baker Mayfield last night?
I thought it was exceptional. I mean, you can't deny the arm talent. I thought that they even expanded the playbook when he came in. They mixed in some of the RPOs for him, but also, you know, his ability to throw the ball tight on a rope, put it in spots where only his guys can make plays, to throw to Landry, you know, was, he saw the defender with his back turned, gave his guy a shot. And you can tell the energy in which he brings and enthusiasm. And he excited the entire, you know, stadium and especially his team.
Yeah, for me, that's where it starts with Baker Mayfield. You see the Cleveland Browns offense to respond the way that they did when he stepped in to become the quarterback. And then just having the performance that he did, the accuracy and the velocity on his passes. Yeah. I don't think the receivers from the Cleveland Browns were ready for it. That's why we saw those drops. You can probably point to four different drops that you can pin on the velocity and the difference.
One by the defense.
Yeah, he got away with one in the middle.
Well, if you want to put it that way, you could probably say five because you had Antonio Callaway on the fade route and on the sticks route just before halftime.
Yep. Wait, when you say velocity, like literally he was throwing the ball too hard and they couldn't catch
it? The ball is coming in a lot faster with Baker Mayfield as opposed to Tyrod Taylor.
It's not that they can't catch it. It's that they were used to
catching the ball with Tyrod. There's a disparity. There's a difference between those. And so when you saw the one that Orson Charles dropped, that should have been a completion on the sideline.
And definitely the Jarvis Landry one. I mean, that just got up on him.
He hits him on the zero on his shoulder pads. Like, it's unbelievable what Baker Mayfield can do from a talent perspective. But to see him put it all together and to see that result in production for that Browns offense,
and
they scored on four of the first five possessions that Baker Mayfield had in the game. So that's the difference when you talk about this team being quarterbacked by Baker Mayfield as opposed to Tyrod Taylor. I think Tyrod Taylor is a much safer quarterback, probably a higher floor, which is why Hugh Jackson decided to have him as the starting quarterback coming into the regular season. But it's clear now that Baker Mayfield is the best quarterback for this team moving forward.
Baker's, listen, what he did yesterday was, we can't overrate it. We don't have to project forward what it means.
Right.
But just analyzing yesterday, that was a brilliant performance in very difficult circumstances for a team that desperately needed it. That crowd at the beginning of the game was a playoff atmosphere for a team that hadn't won a game in 635 days because their fans truly believed we could win. Yeah. We're favored to win a game. And the game started as poorly as it could have. Their quarterback could hit no one. They got a punt blocked. They're playing a mediocre at best Jets team who's up 14-0 midway through the second quarter.
Yeah.
And then their quarterback gets knocked out of the game. Baker didn't even have the benefit of, it's not his first game where he has the week of practice.
Mm-hmm.
He had no first-team reps in training camp and practice. No first-team reps week one, week two, or week three of the season. He said so after the game yesterday. And to come in and do that on a moment's notice, instantly move the ball downfield.
On a short week as well.
On a short week, get him in field goal range, and then you take away the possession where they took knees. They scored every time he had the ball. Like, he was great. You said four drops, right? 17 of 23. So there's six incompletions. One was a bad pass that could have been picked off in the end zone, got away with it. The velocity helped him there because that's, what I think, why the defender didn't catch it. One was a throwaway, and then four drops. That means he was inaccurate one time, the dropped interception. That, and I don't even know if that was inaccurate or he just didn't see the defender.
He didn't see him.
He was placing the ball. Juice Landry, their big offseason acquisition, had been targeted six times for one catch before Baker came in the game. 7 of 9 to Juice Landry after that for 91 yards. Everything was better once he got in that football game. And Tyrod Taylor got a bum deal in Buffalo. He had 51 touchdowns, 16 picks in his 3 years there, took them to the playoffs. Tyrod's been bad this year. Yep. He was very bad in week one. He had a bad turnover in week two, and he was awful yesterday. He left the door open. Now, Baker didn't have to step through it. Baker could have come out there and played poorly. Instead, he came out there and was brilliant. He's going to be their starting quarterback. And his story, I'm not familiar with a story like this. A walk-on at two places sets the NCAA efficiency record 1 year, then resets it the next year while winning the Heisman Trophy. Number one pick steps on the field like this and helps that franchise get a win. This is almost make-believe stuff up to this point.
Well, it's exciting to see what he's going to do next, because now he's going to have a full week of preparation. They're going to be able to put the plays in that he likes, but also the defense is going to have an opportunity to start preparing. So it's going to get more difficult. I think he was thrown in at the right time because he didn't have time to process anything and think. And that was just him reacting and just playing football. And he's shown that he can be a very accurate quarterback, but also I looked at how his teammates responded. So that told me that his teammates believe that he should have been a starter all along, and they love playing with him because he knows where to put the ball.
And you know what, Bart? And it's not just the offensive teammates. It's everybody on the team, because you saw a much more active defense in the second half that created turnovers, that was able to create opportunities for a short field, and Baker Mayfield was able to take advantage of it. So it all has to tie together, but it starts with the belief that we have somebody that can not only be a passenger, but a difference maker at the quarterback position. That's exactly what Bake was last night.
I like what you said, that he came in without much preparation, that he had to go in and play, and his football instincts was just so on it. But you wonder how sustainable this is now that other opposing defenses will be able to start prepping for him.
Absolutely, because the Jets really didn't light him up because they were tired from blitzing so much for Tyrod in the first half. I think they ran out of gas. Now people are going to see what he does well. They're going to make sure that they take those seam routes away, those crossing routes away, and see how accurate he can be outside the numbers. He showed that he can be very accurate within the numbers, and they're going to try and get him on the move and flush him to the left. I don't know if he's going to pull off another Philly special this season.
Right, but here's what Baker has working in his favor. He's got a good defense.
Yes.
That defense last year forced 13 turnovers. This year they've already forced 11 turnovers. Like, we were talking to the Chiefs and Steelers earlier. He's got to outscore people. You don't need a great offense for the Browns to be able to win football games this year. They have drafted well defensively. Myles Garrett was a monster last night. Denzel Ward, who I did not think they should draft, has three turnovers in three games. There's three forced turnovers in three games. They didn't even have Emmanuel Ogba last night. You don't need great quarterback play for the Browns to be a good team. And Baker clearly right now, the stage isn't too big for him. He might be a little guy. The stage is not too big for him.
All right, Bart, thanks so much for coming in
today.
Great
job.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.